Okay. Good morning, everyone. How was the keynote? Good? Good as yesterday? Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Brad. So, good morning, everyone. My name is Adam Hall. I sit inside the Windows Server and System Center Marketing Group. My role is to own the application scenarios across Windows Server Application Platform, System Center Application Management, and the Windows Azure Application Management as well. In this session, we're going to go through what we mean by application management in System Center 2012. We've got a fairly demo-heavy set of sessions content today. We do have a couple of speakers to come up on stage. We're going to uncover a little bit of what we showed you in the keynote on day one, the application itself, go behind the scenes and see how we built that, talk to the guys who actually built the application. And also, we've got MSIT internal to talk about Windows Azure a little bit and how we're doing that as well. Okay, so please, if you've got questions, raise your hand and either go up to the microphone or we'll repeat the question for the recording. So what do we mean by cloud and data center management with System Center 2012? We break this down into three buckets here, of which the middle one is what we're going to focus on today. The productive infrastructure is where we look at the infrastructure management. That's for those of you who were in the keynote on day one, that's what Vijay was talking about, the fabric extraction, the way we can manage all the different hypervisors, all the physical hardware. That's also where we have a lot of process automation and self-service infrastructure under the hood sits as well. On the right-hand side, the Your Cloud pillar is where we start to look across all of the different clouds, whether that's on-premises, whether that's in Windows Azure Public Cloud, or looking ahead, as you saw a sneak peek at the end of the keynote, to the service provider hoster platform as well. And then in the middle, which is where I spend most of my time, the application platform, which ultimately everything else that you do on both the left and the right builds to delivering applications. Applications are what drive the business. Applications are what end users see. It's what end users live in. And all of the infrastructure and cool stuff that you do around that is about delivering the applications, meeting SLAs, delivering all your different applications, no matter where they run. So we're going to cover today what those applications look like, how they are different from the applications that you have in your environment today, some of the different technologies that come together to deliver those applications, and then how we deliver out in a service-centric approach with self-service, and how we manage and monitor those applications to meet your SLAs as well. So just one slide on System Center. It's the one setup slide that I'm going to do that just sets the scene for everything. You probably have seen this slide already, but I will talk through it again just as well in case, because you get a different view from each of us in the team. So System Center is the focus for 2012. When we started developing the product 2 years ago, when we had 2007, 2008, 2008 R2, some 2010 releases, they were kind of all over the place in terms of release cycle, and they very much had a insular product kind of view. And we started looking at, well, what do we need to do to deliver IT as a service? How are we going to do that? First decision we made was to make it one product and bring it all together from a business and a licensing construct. Tick the box. Now, how do we bring the technology together to deliver on all of this? So what you see in 2012 is a very integrated suite of individual components. And yes, they install separately, but when you put them in, they have connectors between them. They have frameworks that work together. We have data synchronization. The self-service model is what brings that to the fore. And if we start with the end of the service model, how do your business owners get access to their applications? How do you enable your IT owners to be able to manage and deploy those applications? How do we bring all of that management and monitoring to the fore so that you can create that template? When Ryan filled in that self-service request in demo two, what went on behind the scenes with that? How did we build that service template, that catalog, if you will? It's great that you can have a restaurant, and I'm just going to turn my phone off. I do apologize. It's beeping at me. Goodbye. If you start a restaurant and you want to build a menu, the first thing you've got to decide is what kind of food are you going to deliver? Then what goes on the menu? Once you've developed your menu, how do you make sure that you can make that same meal the same way every time? And what we're doing here is building a consistency model. The service delivery and automation that Sean talks about are about how do you automate these things and how do you get the consistency? How do you do the same thing every time? When someone asks for something, how do you know that they're actually going to get what they ask for? All the approvals, all the authorizations, all of the technology that comes together as well as the business process there. Once we configure and deploy across physical, virtual, across different clouds, across different infrastructures, it doesn't really matter where it runs. And we have a phrase that we'll start using with Windows Server 2012, which I'm glad I can finally say the name, and System Center 2012 vNext as well, is every app, any cloud. And the whole point is there, we want to manage every application, regardless of the platform. We want to be able to configure and deploy that no matter which infrastructure it sits on. Once you have that out there, how do you monitor and operate that and make sure it's okay? That's roughly where all the different components sit. There are some duplications, Ops Manager and VMM being specific ones that light up at different scenario, different levels in there as well. But ultimately, that's what we're trying to deliver with System Center 2012. That's the one setup slide that I'm going to do. We're going to move on from there. Okay. Applications. How do we deliver standardized, scalable, and consistent applications? The first thing I'm going to talk about is abstraction, Server App B. How many of you in the room have sequenced and deployed an application with the desktop version of AppV through the MDOT package? There's a few of you. Okay, Server AppV is a whole lot easier. Server AppV is, it comes out of the same code base as desktop AppV. We split the code base about 2 years ago, about 18 months ago, and started developing Server AppV. And Server AppV has a few differences to desktop AppV, things like capturing COM, COM Plus, WMI, SQL Server reporting services, different local Active Directory groups and so forth. And we make it very easy to start a sequence, capture an application on the way through, and put that into a bubble. Once it's there, it is now abstracted away from the operating system. Things like scalability, things like updating the application, being able to lift an application up, recompose the underlying operating system, and put it back down. No more install a patch and reboot the server. That kind of model changes a lot in the data center with Server AppV, and especially when you move into the service template model. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that when we get into the demo. Service templates. You saw the application being deployed and scaling out in the keynote. I'm going to show you what that actually looks like. I've got a copy of the keynote environment that we're going to drill into. And the way we do that is through the service templates, and they're about consistency. How do you take everything about an application, all the application resource files, all of the configurations around how much CPU, RAM, and hardware do you need, all of the SLAs, the health, the pieces that come together, the networking, the storage, the compute, the domain join, all of that stuff. We bring that into a service template model, and then when we deploy it, we know it's going to work the same way every time. You have a single sysprep image that gets laid down. You can configure all the different roles and features for Windows Server, and then you can delegate out the right to deploy that. Service templates are an interesting one from an ownership point of view, because the IT data center admin and the application owner, and to some degree the developer as well, all come together to create this template. It's a real handshake. And when we talk about the two different roles of the IT pro and the data center, the data center admin and the application owner, it really is a collaborative effort to build these service templates. So for those of you in the room that are IT pro, data center admin, working on the servers, building applications, you're going to need to talk to these guys to understand how their app works, how it comes together, and you're probably going to need to talk to your developer brethren as well to work out how those apps get deployed, how they get configured. And when the guys come up to talk about how they built the app, we're going to have the infrastructure guys here, but they certainly worked very closely with their dev partners in the building of that app. Once you have your application out, how do you get insight into it? We talked about the difference between availability monitoring and performance monitoring. Knowing an app is up and available is kind of useful. It gives you five nines of availability. You get a green dashboard. That's fantastic. But how is the app performing? What is the end user experience? When a user uses the application, what happens? If you don't have this deep insight, if you can't see what's going on under the hood, you're going to look at the virtual machines, look at your Ops Manager console and go, well, everything's fine, right? But the app is slow. How do you drill in and find out why the app is slow? We're going to cover a little bit about that today. And then control. And the phraseology that I tend to use here is delegation with control. Being able to have IT delegate out to people not in that realm the right and ability to deploy and manage their own applications, but still maintain control. Still, we showed with Ryan deploying the app that Vijay could pick up what was going on. We can detect when something goes into the environment and pick up and say, well, how do we operationalize that application? How do we know that, wow, he deployed an app out, but what's backing it up? What's monitoring it? Is there antivirus on it? Is it in the patching regime? All of these things that IT does when something new goes into the environment. Who updates the CMDB? So the automation that we have to detect these things, and as an app that deploys, Virtual Machine Manager, for example, synchronizes to Operations Manager so that Operations Manager is now aware of all those virtual machines and applications that go out. Operations Manager syncs to Service Manager, so the CMDB automatically gets updated. Now everyone's aware of what actually happened. We can operationalize that. We can have Orchestrator pick up and do runbooks and push things and configure things and do all sorts of information there. So that's really what we mean when we talk about applications. The application delivery lifecycle, and I'm going to start with this slide, and this is actually the last slide that you'll see at the end as well when we do a wrap. Starting with the application specification. What is the app? We talked about the service template. So what are all the pieces that come together? When we talk about a service, what we mean is the application itself and everything that surrounds that in the periphery. What hardware does it sit on? What domain is it part of? What network config has it got? What roles and features are installed? What resource files are in play? What else does it talk to? That is a service. And instead of thinking about an operating system, as Brad tends to put it, they're doing the mating ritual with the installation of an application, abstracting that away and looking at it holistically of, so what is the app in its entirety? What does it talk to? What are all the databases? What are all the things that come together? Creating that service template, we talked about bringing everyone together to work on this. And even though it gets created in Virtual Machine Manager, it certainly gets leveraged in lots of other places. The service template model turns up in the CMDB in Service Manager. App Controller exposes in a very simplistic way what that application service template looks like. You can customize the deployment on demand. So that service template can have parameters, and I was talking to someone in the TAP program last night about an application that gets deployed multiple times with slightly different configurations each time. Different business units, different geographies, different geolocations. Saying, well, here's my app, and it's kind of vanilla, but then we pump out a green one, a blue one, and a red one. It's really only one version of the app, but you pipe in a slightly different connection string or a slightly different naming standard or something slightly different. The ability we have to customize that deployment on demand as we deploy. The deployment of the service can either be a back-end IT function or it can be a delegated model out to an application owner. Ryan showed at the end how he could go and deploy his app. I'm going to show you how we manage the back-end resources there. And then from an updating point of view, the model with the service templates to take a copy of that template, make changes and apply that and either have it enforced immediately or delegate out to the application owner to apply those updates when they want to. The update model with a service template means that depending on what you change depends on what happens. If you only update, say, the website, then all that's going to happen is it's going to unmount that website, apply the new one, and we're done. It could be that you've replaced the underlying virtual machine template, in which case it's going to drop the whole service and bring it back up. But it does it in a smart way through what we call upgrade domains. And upgrade domains basically mean if you've got one version of the app running, it will ensure that at all points in time, that application remains up. It'll put a second tier out, update that one, and then bring the second one back down, reducing the downtime, increasing the availability. So with that, I'm going to stop doing slides, because I know you always want to see stuff rather than looking at slides all day. And I'm going to start with the end. And starting with the end means starting an app controller. An app controller is application self-service. And we talk about self-service. Sean and I have got a session on Thursday where we talk about the future of the SSP. And App Controller certainly has a role in that future. An App Controller, the application self-service, this is where I log into when I want to get access to the infrastructure that I have. So I have access to a few different clouds. I have two different virtual machine manager instances, two different private clouds, one for development and one for pre-production. I don't have access to the production cloud at this point in time. I have one service running in each one, and you can see that I have a delegated quota applied. In development, I have a total of 15 virtual machines. As I hover over, it can tell me how many I've used, how many I've deployed. Very simply seeing the capacity that I've been delegated. This is my swimming pool, how big it is, what I'm using of it, and the same for pre-prod as well. Now, you can see there's an unlimited under pre-production. What that means is that I can deploy as many virtual machines as I can fit into this amount of processes, storage, and memory. Okay, so you can get very, very granular about what are the capacity limitations you want to apply. What are the constraints that you have? Is it about how many VMs are running? Typically not. It's really about how much CPU, RAM, and disk you have on that environment. I also have a couple of Windows Azure subscriptions. The PCI one is one that we use in the private cloud infrastructure day. For those of you that may have done that, That's the Windows Azure subscription associated with that system. And then I have my Windows Azure demo subscription as well, which you can see I've got a bunch of different services deployed in there. As an app owner, I have no idea typically, and Ryan made a bit of a joke about it, I think Vijay made a joke about it, about, you know, not many app owners come to IT saying that they know the IP address that they want and they know the schema that they require in Active Directory and they know all the details. They just know they've got an application and they need to deploy it, they need access to it, and what this is what they need. So in the virtual machines view, I can very easily see, well, what is the detail under those applications? Once I've deployed, I can see the machine names, I can click on them. Depending on the rights that I have, refreshes, I can do things like remote desktoping, I can go to the console, I can turn it off, take a snapshot, and whatever. All of those buttons in that toolbar are delegated rights, and I can turn them off or turn them on in Virtual Machine Manager so that I can or cannot break the system depending on it. But the point here is that the application looks simplistic on the surface, but I can still find out that detail under the hood without having to call IT, without having to go look. It just exposes that to me. And lastly, the services page is where we see a tile view, or you can actually do a detailed view if you want to sort it that way as well, where you can get a breakdown of all the applications that you have. You see that I've deliberately broken my dev intranet. I've gone behind the scenes, as you would have seen in the last page, and stopped those services so that you can see the updates coming through. And you can see that, wow, there's something wrong infrastructurally with this application. So that's probably a good instance that my IT department's looking at something. And, of course, I see all the Windows Azure roles that I have here as well. So that's kind of the end view. But how do we get to this point? How do we get to the point where those applications were deployed? Going to jump over, and this is Virtual Machine Manager 2012, for those of you who may not have seen it. And what you're seeing on your screen here is a breakdown of that expenses application and what it looks like from an IT point of view. This application has three tiers. It has a front tier, it has a web service tier, and it has a SQL tier. We break those out to logically manage this. And if you think about most applications in an environment, they're very rarely a single box. They typically have a database, they have a front-end web server, maybe they're talking to some other web tier, some other applications. There's usually more than one virtual machine involved in an application in an environment. Virtual Machine Manager allows us to break out and see, again, that same information, but a little more detail around the virtual machine that's running, and also what's running on it. So the front tier has Contoso Expenses front tier, that's the web side. We're running a version of SQL. Here, and I'm going to talk about how this breaks down, and then ServerAppV and the web services tier are running in the mid-tier as well. So this is just a view showing me what the application is. Where that comes from is Virtual Machine Manager has a concept of a library, and the library holds all of the resources, all the physical resources, like the machines, as well as all of the profiles and service templates. So if we take a look at, we'll take a look at version 2 of it. If we bring up that service template and take a look at how that was constructed under the hood, I'm going to bring it up in the designer, and the designer is where you create the service template. It's a drag and drop, point and click kind of environment where we can see what's going on. So I would just make it a little bit bigger. Okay. So App Controller showed the app owner a very simplistic view of their service, but this is the IT view. This is what's really going on under the hood. We start with the definition of the application. What is it named? What version release are we talking about? If we start with the back tier, the SQL tier, and take a look at the properties of this tier, what we're going to see is a breakdown of all of the information about this. Obviously, it gets a name. Once this just opens up, I'll take a sec just to cache this for the first time. Here we go. Okay. So a few pieces of information about the SQL tier. First thing is, do we want to prevent live migration? Is this box running somewhere that we have very deliberately put it and we don't want Hyper-V or any other hypervisor to be moving this VM around? Let's start with that. Second thing we're going to be asked for is, what is the order? So most applications have an order that they get deployed. Typically, you lay the database down first, then you put the mid-tier out, and then you put the front-tier out, simply because there's prerequisites in each of those. What is the order that we need to deploy this application in? And also, when you do updates, what is the servicing order? Again, there may be updates that come down that you need to update that application in a very specific order. Whether the machine tier can be scaled, are we going to be able to scale this application for load? In this particular instance, the SQL server is pretty grunty. We don't need to scale it. We haven't enabled that. Every tier, and I won't do this for all of them, has what's called a hardware configuration. This is standard virtual machine stuff. And my recommendation for you guys is, even if you're not doing multi-tier applications, if you're just deploying virtual machines using infrastructure as a service, do a single-tier virtual machine in a service template. Simply because you're going to be able to configure not only things like the capability and the hardware, standard virtual machine hardware, but you can also configure the operating system configuration of that virtual machine. You don't need scripts, you don't need to do anything, it's all here for you in the UI. So in that virtual machine, you can put what the computer name is. Now, you use things like hashes and question marks to put strings in. So this one is hard-coded for the SQL Server. There's only one of them. We know what the name needs to be. We've hard-coded this. When we look at the next tiers, you're going to see that there's random numbers applied, and it basically goes, what's the next number in the instance, and it will give it a fresh name. You can define what the local admin password is going to be, either by typing in the password as here, as we've done, or if you've got a run-as account, it will configure that. You can pipe in the product key, the time zone, the operating system, and so forth. So this is the operating system that is going to be running for this tier. And where it gets really interesting is that we can pick all of the Windows Server roles and features that are available in the operating system, and through a tick box here, have them enabled automatically. So the list that you see here is everything that when you run up Server Manager on a Windows Server box and you go through and add a role or add a feature, now we've made it a tick box. So you can have a single virtual machine, a single sysprep image, I should say, and have one image of that template, and as it deploys, automatically have Virtual Machine Manager enable the roles that you require. So whether it's going to be an Active Directory Domain Controller, all the way down to simply being a web server. You'd simply tick those roles and features just like you would manually in the server, and Virtual Machine Manager, once that sysprep image comes up, will enable these for you. Same thing applies for the features, and instead of the roles, we can now see that we're installing .NET to enable some application installation. Configuring the domain join, which domain we're going to connect to, and which run-as accounts are we going to use in order to do that. That's kind of virtual machine level stuff, right? You can do that level just if you're deploying a virtual machine. You would stop there, you've configured a tier, you can do all of that cool stuff out of the box, tick box, no problem. Now we get to the interesting bit. We can do a dynamic deployment of SQL Server as part of a service template. Now, you might have a big SQL farm, and that's fine. You can just point your application at that. But if you want to have SQL part of the application, we can do an on-demand deployment of SQL Server. And the way that we do that is we simply specify, again, the operating system that we require, and then we have the configuration of SQL Server itself. What name do we want? What are the DAC packs we're going to attach to that? And how are we going to install SQL Server? These are the databases, these are DAC packs that are going to be attached, and any pre- and post-install scripts that are coming as well. So we're doing some configuration after the installation. SQL Server, to do the SQL Server install itself, what instance name do you want to get, what instance ID do you want to give? Basically, all of the questions that you're going to get asked to deploy SQL, if you ran up SQL manually and went through the next wizard, are going to be piped in here. All the configurations around where is the media source, we've embedded it inside the virtual machine in this case, but it could just as easily be on a file share somewhere on the network. Who are the SQL Server admins? What authentication mode are you going to be running? Whether you're going to allow TCP remote connections and so on are going to be configured there, and then your service accounts. So now in the tier, we're going to lay down, bring up the virtual machine, configure it with all of those roles, install SQL, attach all the databases for the application, and then bring up the next tier. So that's the SQL tier. Next tier, we'll go to the web service. And this one's slightly different in that we aren't doing a deployment of SQL, but we're doing a deployment of the application.
Excuse me.
So again, what is the hardware configuration for this particular tier? And here we have the hashes that are involved. So as we roll out tiers, as we scale the application and do multiple instances, VMM's automatically going to increment the number. So we're going to start with EXP, MGR, WS, and then the next available number that is 2 digits long. You can have this as long as you want. So it's going to start with 01, 02, 03, and so forth, the increment up, ensuring that this virtual machine is going to get a unique name on the network. The application configuration is a little different here. We're deploying out a web application and a server at V package. So for the web application, we simply point to the host zip file that we've created with the web deploy package. We give it a name, any parameters that go with it, and again, any pre- and post-install scripts that go with that application. In this case, we're doing some configuration to allow a specific service account to be able to have access to the application. For server at V, we are again pointing to the server at V package, but this time we are piping in some additional credentials and so forth required to run that application. There is a pre-install script, which is, let's go make sure that the server at V agent is running. You can't deploy a server at V package if you don't have the server at V agent installed. So simply we're going to automate the deployment of the server at V agent before we try and drop the server at V package out. That's the mid-tier, and then the front tier I won't go into is exactly the same, but it's just got a web package that goes with that. So that's the service template. That's how it all comes together. That's how the application was built behind the scenes. So any questions on any of that before we jump forward? Cool. So at this point, I'm going to ask the guys who actually built the service template. We very deliberately chose not to build this application ourselves. We wanted to have a partner build this application from scratch. So the guys that are going to come up on stage in a sec, they work for the partner who built this application. They were infrastructure guys. These are the guys who built the service template. They developed the app. They sequenced it in the server at V. They built the service template. And I simply took a handoff of this template. It was a very deliberate decision on our part to do this for a few reasons. One, we wanted to make sure that we just weren't doing everything. We wanted to see how hard it was for a partner to come up to speed really quickly on doing this for themselves. We just simply gave them a spec of what we wanted, and they went away and built it and clearly learned a lot, as you will see. But also, we're going to make this application available to all of you guys. We're going to put this on download.microsoft.com. We're going to put this into the solution accelerators that are coming in a couple of months' time, and we're going to make it available to all of our field as well. Because we want you guys to be able to take this apart and see how we built it. We're even going to give you the source code for the application. Okay, so we're going to show you, this is how you build a cloud-based on-premises application. We're going to do the same for Windows Azure, by the way, as well. But we want you to be able to pick up the application, see how it was built, see how we build these templates and pull it apart so you can learn, you can deploy, and see what this looks like in your environment as well. So with that, I'm going to ask Andrew and Bevan to come up from Intigen. These are the guys who built the application, and I'll let them talk through a couple of slides and explain, you know, what they learned on the way through. So welcome these guys, please.
My name is Andrew Kosmodakis. I'm an infrastructure consultant for Intigen out of Wellington in New Zealand. So as Adam said, we had a bit of a fun time standing up this puppy. He wanted us to prove that it could be done by anybody, so he picked us. So he came to us in the first instance and said, hey guys, we've got a bit of a request. We need you guys to kick off a System Center 2012 private cloud for us based that's going to be used on our keynote for us. So we sat down, had a look at it, and went, oh yeah, look at the time frames, pretty cool, we've got about 4 or 5 weeks, shouldn't be too bad. At the end of the day, we'll just kick off a few SCVMM templates for Adam and install an app for him, as you do every day in your normal scenario. Sat down, had a bit of a chat with him, and he goes, well actually boys, I want to see some scale out. I want to see scale out, scale down, some performance loading, I want you guys to hammer this puppy. So, okay, see how we go here. We better start getting some coffee ready and we better start actually learning some things. So we sat down and looked at it and realized, well, it's not just a bunch of VMs. It's not just a bunch of apps being installed on a bunch of VMs. The service template button that we saw in the top of the console actually had a purpose, and we thought we better start using it. We hadn't paid attention to it pretty much because being infrastructure guys, we'd looked at it from this typical perspective of how we do virtual machines as we did in 2008 and so on and VMware and kept following that sort of practice around it. Once we started looking into the service templates, we realized, Christ, this feature is actually quite powerful. We stood up the SQL tier, so we had to learn about DAC packs and pre-install of SQL. We looked into the web tier and realized, okay, the web deploy kits, this should be good. And in the middle tier, which is also our web services tier, it was like, what are we going to do here? Adam turns around and says, boys, learn server at V. If you know anything, you're going to have to learn server at V. So we had sat down and thought about it and thought, okay, we'll look into it. Being infrastructure guys and also desktop guys in some respect, we'd also spent a lot of time in the desktop at V space. So I looked at it and went, okay, it's going to get a little bit messier being server-based. This is going to get really interesting. What are we going to do around it? It's going to be pretty complex. We better set up a couple of machines and spend some time on it. Before we realized, we created a recipe for it, created some templates, and the server at VPUT was actually the easiest part of the solution. It was repeatable, it made it simple, and the deployment scale-out was very easy.
Yeah, so once we'd done a lot of these features with the service template and we'd created a lot of the basic website functionality and worked with the developers on getting the code right just for the basic framework of showing an expenses app that did a few basic things, we had to work on how we're going to show some of the load stressing, so the increasing of the CPU, and what did that look like in the SCOM console, and how do we make it not work? How do we turn it so the developers could had to write bad code, and they always said that they never wrote bad code, so we had to sit down and figure out what they were going to do within the web application to try and trigger those operations manager and APM triggers. Ben, one of the developers, actually found an MS article on the top 10 things not to do in code, so he wrote a lot of the code based on that. So now that we could break it, we turned around and turned the APM features on, and it was just, a lot of the time it was really easy. The developers kept asking us, how do we turn on APM in the operations manager console and in the website itself? And what they found was that there wasn't actually anything they had to do. We just deployed the application, turned on the operations manager agent, and APM took care of it itself. We did the control UI as well. Don, one of the developers, wrote a very nice Metro UI on how to control that Ryan was using yesterday in the keynote demo. And now, once we did all that sort of stuff, it was like, well, okay, how do we upgrade it? How do we scale it? How do we take the service template and push it, increase the capacity of these VM templates? And what we found again was that it was really easy to do. A lot of the time it was just right-click and scale out or increase the load and using some of the features of Operations Manager to trigger those scale outs. It was just really easy. So the lessons we learnt on doing this deployment were all around the ease of deployment and the repeatable process. If we wanted to trash the whole thing and start again, the service template was always there, and we could just right-click and redeploy the whole thing after tweaking a few bits of the code or increasing the number of applications or adding stuff in. Upgrading was really easy as well. If we got a new version of the web app, we could just apply a new version of the template, and it would go away and take care of that. And if we had a problem with the web app that didn't deploy properly, we found that rolling back was really simple as well. So yeah, scaling out, redeploying, and upgrading were really simple. And as each stage was completed, as we added a new tier in, or if we added something in that increased the complexity, the actual complexity of the template didn't increase incrementally as well. It stayed pretty much the same through the whole process. The SQL DAC packs, that was something that was new to us as well. We'd not deployed much of the SQL DAC pack technology before, and so it became a real learning curve on how do you package these things up, how do we get that data and import it into the template and get that deploying. And again, it was really simple just through the creation of the DAC packs through the SQL console and then adding them into the library and deploying them that way and through the template. The pre-staged SQL as well, that was another great feature of being able to pre-stage a SQL server as part of the template, so it made life real easy. I guess the key word for the whole thing was it was really easy. It was a lot easier than we anticipated, especially when we were given a time frame of about 4 weeks and we thought we might be under a bit of pressure, but it went really well.
Thank you very much, guys. So thanks for that. These guys make it sound a little easier than it was. I leant on them pretty hard. They had a lot to do in a really short time frame. The screws were on. These guys were responding really well. So that whole application that we're going to deploy, we used in the keynote. You know, these guys put a lot of hours in. So I thank them very much for what they did. So and everyone's going to benefit out of that because it's going to become available. So I want to move forward a little bit here. We've shown you what the application constructs look like. We've showed you how we pull it together. These guys have talked about the building of the application. What we actually ended up with, and this is a slightly different version of the application than you saw in the keynote. This one I haven't filled out with a lot more information. But what we had here, a standard application, built in a very metro kind of style, as seems to be the fad at the moment. And allowing, this is actually a fully functioning application. Well, when I say fully, it functions to a certain degree. You can add things into it. You can drag and drop things around. You know, you have the ability to do a few things. So it does actually function. And what when they were talking about the breaking of the application and how do you break an app, as I said, I sort of was talking to the engine developer saying, no, I want a bad app. You know, I don't want a good one. I want one that's broken. But I want to be able to make it good, and then I want to make it be able to bad, and then I want to go back to be good. It's flip backwards and forwards. And the whole point here is to simulate a developer really making a mistake in the code and having a bad part of your application that's not performing well. And so what we came up with, or what these guys came up with based on that, was the ability to crank up load on these things, and that goes and hammers the application, applies that load to the app. But also the buttons here that we have to break the application, to simulate something really not going so well. And for example, if we go and turn on the server 404 errors, come back to this application, it's not really going to work so well. Okay, so we have the ability to turn it on and off. And I show you this just simply because it's going to become available and you can see that it actually kind of works. If I refresh the right screen, would help a lot. But what I want you to understand is that these are things that really happen in applications in your environment. If you're developing applications, things go wrong. Bugs get found. Things don't work so well. Being able to simulate these errors is good for your developers to see how we pick it up. But also, when you start pointing application performance monitoring against your real apps, we'll show you the information that comes back. So let's move forward a little bit. We've deployed our application, and we've got it out there, and we want to make it sure it's okay. Operations Manager has done infrastructure and application availability monitoring for many, many years. A lot of you in the audience are probably aware of that. In 2010, we made an acquisition of a company called AviCode. And AviCode gave us the code base for the deep application insight. That AviCode acquisition is now embedded inside Operations Manager 2012. The AviCode code name will go away. It will be end of life in the near future. The functionality is now built into Operations Manager. And as Bevan and Cos were talking about, by the way, it's Bevan's birthday today too, so happy birthday, mate. What we have is the ability to discover applications. And when we deploy the Operations Manager agent, there is a management pack that you can install. It's not in the default install. You do need to deploy the application, deploy the management pack. When you deploy the management pack, that gets distributed to all of the Operations Manager agents in your environment, and it starts looking for applications that are capable of have application performance monitoring applied against them. In the 2012 release of Operations Manager, we do .NET web applications only. AviCode can do a lot more than that. We will continue to update Operations Manager with some cumulative updates that are coming in the near future, and also the next version, which will come to support Windows 8 and a few other things around Windows Azure as well. We'll have additional features and functions built in so we can do APM against a lot broader set of applications. But this is turned on basically through a wizard. And the first thing you do when you create the wizard, it says, well, what do you want to turn APM on for? If I just do a search on the environment, what you'll see is that it's pulling back all of the applications that have at least one element of application performance monitoring that can be performed against the application. And APM is based on three things. It's based on server side, it's based on client side, and it's based on synthetic transactions. The server side is picking up the back-end code, what's executing at the back-end in terms of the database layer, in terms of the back-end application infrastructure. The client side is what is the end user experience? What is happening when the user is doing something in that application? The way we capture that information from a web application point of view is there's a JavaScript injection that happens on the iOS website that allows us to get that telemetry back. And basically, when that information comes back, we can see what's really going on from the end user. So simply, it's a discovery mode that takes, once you deploy the IIS APM management pack, takes around about 30 minutes to an hour, depending on your topology, to figure out where all the apps are, and then your list starts populating. Once you've selected your application, you simply click Next, and I'm just stepping through one that's already done, but the wizard just takes you through these three steps as well. First thing is, what do you want to turn on? Do you just want performance alerts, or do you want application issues as well? Okay, and this is a choice as to what kind of applications you come back. The one thing that I cannot specify for you is, what is the expected threshold for the response time of your application? I don't know the answer to that question, only you do. In this case, we've got it cranked right down to 500 milliseconds, pretty quick, but this could be anything from 1 millisecond to several minutes. However long it takes to typically your application to respond and perform a transaction, that's the number that you should put in there. Client-side, do you want to turn client-side monitoring on? Do you want that JavaScript injection to happen? Do you want to know what's going on at that side? And then from a client side, what are the thresholds that you expect? What are the page loads? What are the WCF timeouts? What are the configurations that you want? Set in there, and simply you click Finish. That's it. That's all there is to it. You turn that on, you walk away, you start using the application, and information starts to come through. This information comes through, and I'll start with the rather verbose version and come back to the simplified one. You start to get this kind of information. And when you open up these alerts that are coming through, this is a client-side alert, and you get a breakdown of that end-user transaction. You can see what the server response time was. You can see what other components of the app were loaded. Was it DOM loading? Was it a peripheral? Was it network? What was going on? In this case, we're loading just the Expense Manager pre-prod environment. You can see that we've got some timeouts here, and that's one example. When it's a slow network, it's just going to be a big, long network bar. But it's going to give you, hey, it's actually there's some network lag going on here. The client clicked on something, and the network didn't respond in an appropriate time frame. Now take a sec to come up. Oh, it's an old one. Let's open a new one. There we go. So as you can see, we just get a breakdown. This one's just pure network response time. The network was slow. The whole point, though, is that you are identifying exactly what the problem is, so there's no finger pointing. It's not a capacity problem, it's not CPU, it's not disk, it's not RAM, it's actually the application is not performing well. Now, the interesting thing that I kind of look at is the trending and reporting around this. And for that, we have the Application Advisor. And the App Advisor is all about getting that, what is my problem that I should be working on today? It's going to ask me to re-authenticate. All right, so this is the what should I work on today from an application owner point of view. What are the issues with the application in my environment that I need to go take a look at and work on and find out? This is the report that you would typically have deployed into your inbox on a morning basis. So let's just go back a couple of months and get an alert. This environment's only been up for a few weeks, so it's not going to have a huge amount of data and information in it. This is going to bring back a report, a visual report, of all of the things that are going wrong in the environment. It's going to give me a top five list, and I get a breakdown of everything that's going on. Just this environment's getting hammered a little bit at the moment. It's a little slow. Give this another couple of secs. See if it comes back all right. Otherwise, we'll jump forward. Come on. All right. We will come back to that in just a minute. Now, the last thing that we showed in Ryan's demo 3 was the ability to synchronize this information across the Team Foundation server. This is now available. It went live on the download sites, I think, on Sunday. It is RTM'd, it is available, and it is a management pack connector that you install into Operations Manager. What that allows you to do is triage these alerts that are coming through. And if it is a code-based bug and you want to get it across to your developers, you simply right-click the alert and assign to engineering. Done. It will then take that entire piece of information, synchronize it across to Team Foundation server, and it then can be triaged by your developer. The good thing about that is that it is bringing back that same information. All that same code level, the same problem is now visible to your developer as well. Okay, so we're closing the loop between the IT side, between the application owner and the developer as well, pulling that all together. So that report's now run. We get a breakdown of all the errors that are happening. We can see where the biggest problems lie. We can see exactly all of the count, all that information that Ryan talked on, and we can see what's really going on down to that kind of line of code error that's happening. And the whole point here is that now you're getting that deep insight. You've deployed your apps out, which are great. You know that they're up and available, but how are they performing and where are the problems lying? Now you can see exactly where those problems are actually occurring. So that's just a little bit about APM, and I'm going through a lot of kind of stuff in an overview session here. A couple of slides I want to show, and then I'm going to get Corey up. So, let's just go back to APM a little bit. So that the APM we talked about being three things, and the key thing here is that you need good infrastructure monitoring in order to do application monitoring. In order to know that it's an app problem, you need to know that it's not a hardware problem. You need to know that it's not a capacity problem. So the infrastructure monitoring operations manager is a base. You bring in APM and you get the server-side actual code, you get the client-side experiences, and then run the synthetic transactions through. And synthetic transactions are simulated end-user transactions. We can run pre-flights through the application. They will go through. They will do the things that a user would typically do and then report back on how they ran. We use those to get the APM data out in our demos. And really all this is doing is simulating the end user. Now, the point of that in the real world is you want to know before your users do that you've got a problem. You don't want your users to come in at 8:30 in the morning and discover the app's down. You want those synthetic transactions running on a regular basis so that you can see what's going on, so that you get the alerts before they do. You want to get one step ahead here, and the whole point is to get ahead of the curve and know what's going on inside the application before your users start calling the help desk saying that the application's not functioning or the application's not working. The application performance monitoring, we turned on all of that. And then the last thing I'm going to cover, actually, before Corey comes up, is the dashboarding. So, actually, I'm going to do this in demo. It's far more interesting to see it for real. Okay. So the dashboard that we showed in the keynote was basically this one. And what we built here is a service-level dashboard that showed the availability, and that's running the way that we get this data is that this is a synthetic transaction that's simply hitting the website going, are you up? Did I get an HTTP get, and did we get an HTTP response? Yes, we did. Great, we're available. But what do the transactions look like? And we're running these transactions from multiple places. We've set a threshold of 7 seconds for our transaction to run, and on average, we're taking 10.9 seconds. Over time, here's what all the different transactions look like. Now, what Ryan didn't show you is that we're actually running these from multiple places across the environment. We're running them from three different servers and three different geographies, three different business units, three different whatevers. And now you can start to see, is this only a problem in one part of the environment, or is this a problem everywhere? Okay? Being able to run these transactions from all across your environment to get a feel for exactly where the problem is. We're running three different ones here. Operations manager takes the results from all three transactions, puts them into the data warehouse, does some cool number crunching, and comes up with the SLA number that is averaged here. But how do we build that? Let's go and take a look at the back end to that application. So let me just go back. That synthetic transaction is configured here. There's a web application transaction model, and you can see we have two models here. We have the expense manager application itself, and we have the expense manager web app. So if we take a look at what that looks like, what we have here is a simple web request. Once this loads up, this one is looking at just the root of the expense manager. So that's configured on a regular basis. I think it's configured what's happening is every 2 minutes from those, just the one server for the availability, so from this one node, we're running that query every 2 minutes, and what we're doing is getting back the performance counters of that transaction. Well, how big was it? How long did it take? Did we redirect? What was the total response time? What was the time between the first byte and the last byte? All that kind of information. We bring all of that back. In addition, we can also say, well, what status codes did we get back? We want to raise an alert if we got anything greater than a 400, which means it didn't work at all. You can do content matching, you can do all sorts of other configurations and settings that are here. So that one is what's running the availability request. if we take a look at the Expense Manager application, this one's doing an extra couple of things as it comes up. First thing it's doing is doing that same transaction to the root web. Yep, the app's up. But now it's running a synthetic transaction through the web service. And it's going, well, let's actually simulate getting those claims back, just loading that front page and pulling back that information. How long did that take? This one, because we're running the, I'll show you how we actually did that. If I pull up the control app for production, what you'll see, well, it might take a sec to load. While that loads up, it's got a delay on it. And what now it's simulating a transaction going on the way through. Now, these, you don't need to know these URLs, you can capture them, okay? So one of the things you can do is when you start a capture, it will record what you do. And so it will launch IE for you, you click through the application, and it will record all of the HTTP GETs, all the HTTP posts, all the things that you do on the website, and put them into the string so that you can simulate your way through the application, and it will then run that application for you. That will now be up. Here we go. So we've got the Chaos Monkey here that is running on a scheduled task. It is running a delay between 6 seconds and 10 seconds, simulating all that data that's coming through. That's how we got that information coming through. So that's how we configure that. And then, actually, sorry, I just clicked on the wrong button. Apology for the screen refresh. Then we do what's called service level tracking. And this is where we're starting to really branch out into the IT as a service with System Center 2012. We can now set service levels on our applications and operations manager. What they are checking for is what is it that you want to target. And so we have targeted the watches group, which is all of those synthetic transactions go into what's called a watches group. We're targeting the entire application watches group. And then we've set two service level objectives. The first one, the first one will be the availability. And this is saying that HTTP request needs to be a positive response 99% of the time, i.e. 99% availability for that. So that's quite simply set for that one. And for the Expense Manager application, it is taking a look at that perf counter that we configured in the transaction, and it's saying that the transaction response time, so the total response to that application, should be, on average, less than 7 seconds. So those are the two parameters that we set for the service level objectives. Simply set, you can put whatever you want into there. Then we went across and created a new dashboard. And that is as simple as, I'll show you the actual dashboard that we used, is that dashboard in Operations Manager. That is as hard as right-clicking new dashboard. It's kind of hard to drive these wizards sometimes. That's going to come up and say, what kind of dashboard do you want to drive? You can do a standard grid or column layout, and you can configure all the widgets yourselves. You can do a service level dashboard, which is the one we just showed. And you can also do a summary dashboard. And the summary dashboard is the one that has the top in it. So the top 5 alerts, the top 5 issues, those kinds of things. Create the service level dashboard. Give it a name. And it's a simple matter of saying, of all of those different service levels that we have set, which ones do you want to show in this environment? So we can simply take the Expense Manager, and we've actually got an Azure application that we're doing the same thing for. Click OK. What time frame do you want the data warehouse to transact this for and calculate it? Hit Next and create. That was kind of as hard as it was to create that dashboard. The work's been done by the synthetic transaction. That gets all the data. The service level sets what our expectations are, and the dashboard is simply going to populate that data. And if I don't click on that, there we go. That's now going to pull back those two service levels and all the information involved in that. So that will take a few seconds just to pull that information back. Here it comes. So we chose our Expense Manager application, which is the one that you saw in the keynote, the exact same information. And then we also have this running against the Windows Azure application, which is going to be my segue to bringing Corey up, that we can get that same information as well. The summary dashboard that we talked about is the top end. And as this one loads, it's going to pull back the top issues that we have with our application. This one takes a few seconds to populate as it pulls the data back, but it's going to pull back the performance of the application, which you can see there's the 3 different watcher nodes that we have. It's pulling back the fact that these are our top 3 issues, and we get the state of those machines that we're watching from as well. So very, very easy to build very, very rich application dashboards to showcase this information and get that insight into the application that you've deployed. So at this point, I'm going to ask Corey to come up, and he's going to talk a little bit about the Windows Azure side of things. We've talked about on-premises applications. These are running on your environment. We also have the Windows Azure public cloud and the management of that. Corey works for our internal MSIT team, who do a lot of work with the Windows Azure and the application monitoring. So Corey's going to give you a rundown of the real world of how we actually do this. So Corey Delamater, yeah. Everyone.
Thank you, Adam, very much. So if your head wasn't already hurting from whatever you did last night, I would imagine it's aching a little bit with all the information you're getting. But we started the conversation with a single page in App Controller, some very easy to understand tiles, my application. You've seen then demonstrated how you can get really deep go all the way down to the APM level, excuse me, in your application. What I want to demonstrate is how we use Operations Manager then to glue all this stuff back together and basically get back to just a single green icon for your entire application, regardless of whether it's running on a private cloud or it's running in Windows Azure public cloud. How do you kind of glue all those things together? The part I'm going to show is actually possible in Operations Manager 2007 as well as 2012, and then 2012 lights up the scenario even further with things like dashboards and more complex synthetic transactions. So rewinding then a little bit, the reason I'm here is because, like Adam said, I work in Microsoft IT along with Mark West, who's here in the crowd as well. And we've been working with the teams that have been exploring what's possible with Windows Azure and what we can do with our line of business applications to actually run pieces of those apps within Windows Azure. And it's important that I say pieces because we realize very early we don't want to, it's either too risky or for some business limitation, we're not likely going to be moving the entire application into Windows Azure, and that even if we do that, it certainly isn't going to be happening overnight. And so as we put effort into taking parts of our app and running it in private cloud, parts of our app, maybe running it, standalone physical systems and other parts, moving those into Windows Azure, how do we bring that whole picture together? So what I'm going to demonstrate is just basically building a distributed application around that. So we'll come in here, and actually we'll create, I need to get to the authoring section of things. We'll create a new distributed application. So what this is going to bring up is just a simple designer surface for me to do some dragging and dropping here. So we'll call it My Hybrid Application. And we'll put together some of the building blocks that Adam has been demonstrating as we've been going through the session here. So I'll pick a management pack to put things in. And then you can see the designer surface here. So this is where I just define the basic boxes that say I've got some physical systems, I've got some things running in Windows Azure, I've got some synthetic transactions. Again, these are things that have all either been created through this session or there's a subsequent session coming up later this afternoon, I believe, that'll walk you through how to discover Windows Azure applications and so forth. So I want to just show you how to put those things together. So you start adding components. These are just your big boxes that you're going to stuff your items into. So we'll start with just my private cloud VMs. Go down here. We'll choose under logical entity. And there's a lot of choices here. Logical entity pretty much stores the things that you're going to be using on a common basis. Go down to operating system. And since these are just servers that I want to look at, I'll choose Windows Server Operating System. You could choose any level in that hierarchy. This just gives me a more limited set of things to choose from. So at this point, I know I'll just take all the boxes that are related to the Expense Manager application that these guys were working on and put that into the box. So I've got my first collection there. That's all my physical systems. All of these are already targeted with the base OS management pack and various other things that understand how to monitor an on-premise operating system. So I don't have to go and define any additional monitoring. It's already been deployed and running for months. People are familiar with it. So we'll add another component that represents then the part of our application which is running in Azure. So we'll say my Azure hosted services. And then again, we'll go down here, we'll scroll under logical entity, this time to service, and the Windows Azure management pack, there we go, services right there, and under that we'll choose Windows Azure hosted services. So the Windows Azure Management Pack defines a high-level type called a hosted service. And that's basically the starting point for your app within Windows Azure, if you will. And so each one of the instances that we've discovered, we've got this MMS perf app and customer demo and a couple of other things, are then available here for me to drop in. And so again, all of the monitoring and all of the availability state and so forth that's defined within the Azure Management Pack, I have kind of built into those objects that I just drug in there. So didn't have to write a management pack, didn't have to go create any additional monitoring. And then lastly, so you've got your perspective of how the OS is running on-premise. You've got your perspective of how that hosted service is running in the eyes of Windows Azure. Lastly, we want to bring in those synthetic transactions that Adam was just talking about. And that's the real monitoring, right? That's from the outside of an application, testing it and letting you know whether that thing's up and running. So go back. We'll add one more component. These will be my URL tests. Scroll down again under logical entity, and we'll go all the way down to the bottom here. We've got watchers to choose from. So, oh, hold on a second. I think they're called perspectives. There we go. So there's a lot of different perspectives to choose from, various different types of transactions. We'll just go with the web application perspective, and this is where those tests against URLs specifically are located. So you could pick any kind of synthetic transaction here. If there's OLAdB tests you're doing, or UNC path tests, or port pings, or whatever, lots of different synthetic transaction types to choose from. And so again, it's going to show me the things that are related to my apps. I'll grab the expense manager ones and drop them in there. So that's it. I'll save this to my management pack, and then I'll show you what the resulting diagram looks like. Actually, let's see if I can sneak over here. Now we'll have to give it a second. So while we're waiting for that to save, are there any questions up until this point? Yeah? All right, good. And again, this is pretty much straightforward. If you've seen 2007 demonstrated up until this point, you're fairly familiar with the designer experience here. So, yeah. So let's see if we can actually break this thing and give you some interesting data to look at. All right. Not that that's going to help my saving changes, though. But anyhow. So. Again, these are all components that you're probably already familiar with if you've seen Operations Manager 2007 R2. It's not necessarily something revolutionary here. Where it really starts to pop then, and where you get the ability to provide that single pane of glass, is both within the service level, the service levels that you can define at the application, so you can set that at the very top level of this app that we're creating, and then you can create dashboards to present up to your users. So, we started with this very simple view in App Controller. It got complex with templates and so forth. You can bring it back to just a single dot that somebody can go look at to understand all of that monitoring and all of that modeling that's gone into place. So let's open this up, My Hybrid App. View a diagram for this. And you'll see basically it's going to create this top-level object, which is my app. Floating up to that are each one of those component groups. And then as we expand out each of those component groups, you'll see all the instances that are contributing to that and their various states. We'll also see if we've had a chance. All right, this one, not as interesting. So let's pop over to the one that's actually been hanging out for a little while so you can see some data. All right. So you see if we expand this, we've got all the operating system instances. If we expand our synthetic transactions, we've got each one of those tests. If these tests were happening from different regions, as Adam mentioned, you can set up locations in Configuration Manager 2012. So you can say, this ping's coming from Africa, this ping's coming from Europe, this ping's coming from North America, and you can actually see that on a map. You'd have the different perspectives shown here. And then again, all of the modeling that comes from that Windows Azure Management Pack in terms of that hosted service, which contains one or more roles, and those roles may have one instance or 15 instances, depending on how you're scaling it. All of that's folded into this single view. And so then it's this top-level object application that you pivot off of, and you add things like service-level tracking and dashboards to be able to provide that kind of single perspective for your app. So, yeah, questions? Yeah, so the way we set it up here, yes, that's how it would function. You'd have to understand that, you know, a VM changed population or something like that. So, absolutely. So as I demonstrated, it would become stale, absolutely. So you're right in that when you're designing your template, you're going to want, or when you're designing your diagram, you're going to want to account for the parts that are dynamic and actually go through the more involved process to make the diagram account for the fact that it's a dynamic application. Just for simplicity's sake, the demonstration. So the question was, actually, I should repeat it. We'll do this in reverse. What I demonstrated here was just go pick a static list of VMs. If my VMs are changing, and especially if I'm using all the great features that are in AppV and VM, or server AppV combined with service templates and VMM and so forth, and my VM population is changing, isn't my diagram going to become out of date over time? And so, yes, as I demonstrated it, absolutely. You can put more work in and get it to be more dynamic. So. Any more questions? All right. So that's pretty much it for the demonstration.
Thank you, Joy.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, good man. Okay, so we're in the last few minutes. Let's just close out a couple of things as we close back. Created the dashboards. Corey's done his stuff. So a couple of slides. Cross-platform monitoring. So Operations Manager has the ability to manage and monitor, or Systems Center 2012 has the ability to manage and monitor both Linux and Java. From an operations manager point of view and from an application space, we do the Java monitoring as well. So from a supported platforms point of view, we do all of the platforms that you see up there and this supported operating systems matrix as well. So both from a WebShare, the WebLogic, the JBoss, and the Tomcat point of view, those are the supported versions that we have. This is a management pack scenario. I think Pay's doing some sessions, and there are labs as well for how this actually works. So if you want to go and see how the Java monitoring and the Linux monitoring and management looks like, there are hands-on labs for both of those things available. There are also breakout sessions where we drill into this in a lot more detail. The way that we do the Java monitoring, is that if you look at the light blue that you see on the screen, and by that I'm meaning this light blue here, those are all part of the app server. Those are things that you'll have inside your application, different applications and different portions of Java and so forth running on them. The customer has the application. We have what we call the bean spy. And the bean spy is what we put onto that server in order to get all this telemetry data back. Now, it's not quite application performance monitoring in terms of the rich insight down to the line of code today. But you certainly get a lot of telemetry back. You can configure the transactions to run through. The bean spy can do a lot of deep analysis of what's going on in the application. So it is very rich information coming back. We do have a lot of asks for Java application performance monitoring. As you can expect, that is a little more challenging than it is for .NET. But we are certainly looking at what we can do around that in order to get that deep, rich insight around Java applications as well on both Windows and Unix and Linux. So that is in the 2012 release. The manager pack is available. Please go and try it out and check out pay sessions at MMS as well. So let's just close out by going back to that life cycle. We talked about the application specification. We talked about all the underlying resources. We talked about the application library. Actually, this one demo we did not do. I've got time. I'll do it. I don't normally do this one, but we have time. So one of the things that AppController can do that we don't show all that often is the ability to keep applications in sync across different environments. And so we've got two virtual machine instances here. If they were within one, it's a common question. If we had two clouds inside one virtual machine instance, then you would not need to do this. This is keeping in sync two completely different environments. Maybe you have an isolated dev from a prod cloud environment. So we have a template here, and we've been working with the Expense Manager application as this pulls the information back. We've got a new updated version. Maybe the boys have dropped me a new Expense Manager into dev, and I want to bring that across to development. I can simply see the template and copy, go across to the production environment, and you'll see at the moment we've only got version 0.92, and I can paste. That's how hard it is to move an application and all of that service template and everything associated with it between two completely different environments. It draws me up a nice diagrammatic map The green ticks indicate that the resource is exactly the same in both locations. So as you can see, we've got a VHD file that did not change between environments. The web deploy packages didn't change. But what you can see is that there's a new version of the Expense Manager application itself. It tells me there's a little red asterisk, which means you must do something about this. I can right-click and choose whether I want to copy it to the destination or remap it on the way through. If I choose map to existing, it's going to bring up all of the available options inside the environment and say, well, which one do you want to map it to? Or I can simply say, no, you know what, I want a new copy of this to come across. I'll do that for all of the ones that are there. Yes, there needs to be a copy all button. It's my favorite DCR to the app controller team. We simply click OK, and everything going according to plan, that will now copy those resources across from the development environment to my production environment. It will take all the underlying resources. It will take the template XML file itself as well, remap it all back together. What is happening behind the scenes is if we jump quickly over to Virtual Machine Manager, if I could bring up, I'm in Ops Manager. Let me bring up Virtual Machine Manager. Close the designer. And go and take a look at the jobs. What you'll see is a whole bunch of resort things going on. That copy-paste in App Controller is doing an export in one Virtual Machine Manager environment and then an import in the other one. So it does a full export out to a file share, copies the files across, and then imports them at the other end. To the app owner, it was simply a copy-paste. To IT, there was a full export-import process. Now, that's done the export. Now you can see that it's doing the import, and we're all good to go. So what the realities behind that are you can either delegate that down and make it available to your application owners to do it in their schedule, or the Virtual Machine Manager library is just a file share. You can synchronize those file shares using your favorite robocopy, any kind of DFSR, any kind of file sync, whatever you want. You can keep them in sync at the back end as well. That was purely the self-service way of doing it. So that's worth knowing. All right. So we did all that resources to the VMM library. We did all of the performance requirements for the app. We created the service template. You saw the construct of that, how it all came together. We published that template. We delegated out the authority to deploy it. We chose the custom deployment on the way out. We can update the application. Andrew and Bevan talked about how as we were developing the application, once we had the construct of the service template created, every time the devs dropped a new build, they simply updated the service template and updated or redeployed over the top. And then from an updating point of view, which didn't get a chance to show today, is when you create that service template and set that as the new version, you can either apply it automatically or you can delegate out to an application owner the ability to do that. So we have 2 minutes left if there are any final questions before we close out. Nobody? All made sense? Question? Yes. Sure. So the question was application performance monitoring in SharePoint. So it depends on the profile of the application. SharePoint, you will get server-side APM alerts back, but not client-side. So what will happen is you will see the back-end performance characteristics of SharePoint, and when it's running slow or there's a SQL issue or whatever, you will see the back-end information. What you won't get is the pretty bar chart at the front for the client side, and the simple reason for that, well, I should say I'll caveat that, unless you developed a custom front end to SharePoint that includes JavaScript, because SharePoint by default has no JavaScript, which means you can't get client side. But if you've got a custom front end that has JavaScript and we can inject in, then yes, you will get that as well. So it all depends on the application. The roadmap for APM includes the ability to do APM against Windows services and executables like AV Code could do prior to acquisition as well. So a lot of that's going to come back into the product, and we are working with the SharePoint team as well. So it's up there. Question over the back? Do we take an outage to the service?
Yes.
So it depends what you change. Ultimately, the answer to that question should be no outage. And the reason for that is unless you are tearing down the service and completely redeploying, in which case you should really do a side-by-side and then a cutover, it should use the domain upgrades to say, oh, well, I've updated the SQL tier. I'll put a second instance out, move all the connections across to that, and then drop the other one. if you've got upgrade domains configured, if you've got high availability configured and load balancers and all that kind of stuff in your service template, the idea is no downtime for patching, for updating, for changes. There should not be, unless you've chosen to do that or you've got something configured that requires that outage. But simply put, the answer should be no. Great. Well, I've got 26 seconds and it's flashing at me. So thank you very much for your time. I hope you enjoy the rest of your MMS.